chapter 37 of Genesis, verse 12 onwards. Joseph sold by his brothers. Now, Joseph's brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks?" "They've moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben, the eldest brother, heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
May I speak in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen. The title of the sermon today is "The Dangers of Jealousy." And if you were able to focus on that story this morning, you'll probably be aware of why it's been called that. So jealousy is going to be what I'll be mainly focusing on this morning. But before I start, I just want to reflect for a moment on what jealousy actually is. Jealousy is an emotion, and we sometimes think of emotions of having good emotions and bad emotions. So good emotions are things like joy, happiness, and love. And jealousy, hate, and anger would be in the bad category. But emotions in themselves are quite neutral. We can't help the way that we feel. But it is how we choose to react to an emotion, how we act because of it, that is where we can end up in the good or bad category. So feeling jealous in itself is not wrong, but it's what we do with that feeling. So I'm going to start off by looking at the story, the part that we just had read to us this morning, and looking at what that story says about ourselves and what it says about God. But then I'm going to go on to look at sort of the practicalities of jealousy when we experience it in our own lives. And two-pronged approach. The first thing I'm going to look at then is how can we avoid giving rise to jealousy in other people, creating it in other people? And then when we do feel jealous, how can we react in a way which is life-giving as opposed to life-zapping? So let's think first of all about the story. Now, I'm sorry if you weren't here last week, you'd missed episode one, so we're coming right in at the second episode here. But I do hope that people have a sense of the story of Joseph. Of course, I'll only mention it once because of the musical. We've probably all heard a bit about the story. In the bit of the story that we just heard, we get a masterclass from Joseph's brothers of how to react to jealousy in the most destructive way possible. It's not a great example that we get here. But last week, that jealousy that we see in the brothers didn't come out of nowhere. And last week we saw a little bit of the conditions that created the jealousy in them. Here the pot boils over, but I am just going to recap a tiny bit of what was said last week because it puts all of this into context. Dreadful though the brothers' actions are, they are the result of terrible parenting by their father. Their father Jacob, it says in the bit we read last week in chapter 37, verses 3 and 4. Now, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. And not only did he love them, he acted in a very open way about his preference for Joseph. He gave him this special cloak that none of the other brothers were given. And he was also given authority over his older brothers. Now, I don't have any younger siblings, but even the thought of if I did and they were given authority over me, particularly when you're young, as a child or a teenager, that's enough to make my blood boil just thinking about it. So you can imagine how those conditions have been created over the years of that terrible bitterness and resentment in Joseph's brothers. But we also heard last week that Jacob acted like that because it was a pattern of destructive behaviour that had been passed down through his own family, because his father preferred his brother and his mother preferred him. So Jacob had learned that as a parent, it's fine to show preference to one of your children. But of course, we see the terrible product of that. It really is not okay to prefer a child and to show it openly. Also, the other little detail that we saw last week is that Joseph himself didn't do very much to help the situation. Now, it may not have been his fault at heart because he'd always been the preferred one. But we're given this detail about how Joseph had a dream, and in the dream he believed that he'd seen his brothers and his family, his father as well, bowing down to him. If you had a dream like that, would you go and tell your brothers or your family? Well, probably not if you had any sense of tact or sense of how it might be taken by someone else. But of course Joseph told them. And we see now in the passage that we had read today the terrible destructive effect that that had. Joseph has set off to find his brothers who are out in the countryside doing their job as shepherds. The very first thing they say when they see him coming, verse 19, here comes that dreamer. That dream, it sounds as if that was the straw that broke the camel's back. They have had enough, years of it. And so they come up with their plot to get rid of him. They're going to murder him. The only one who isn't happy about it is Reuben, the oldest brother. I wonder how many of you here are the oldest child in your family. Just put your hands up if you have that mantle to bear of being the oldest. Well, these people, but I know it's a generalisation, but very often the oldest child in the family tends to grow up to be quite responsible, because they often have to look after their younger siblings, whether they like it or not. And another thing about the oldest child in the family is that they often get the blame for things. People may be aware of that. I can remember when we had children thinking, I will never put my oldest child in a position where he is blamed for things. And of course, as a parent, you do find, whether you mean to or not, that that does happen sometimes. So we're not told exactly why Reuben decides that he's not happy about this idea, but possibly it's because he's really responsible. It could be that he feels he's going to get the blame if anything happens to Joseph. It could be just that he really loves him and that he loves his father and doesn't want anything to happen. We don't really know, but he's the only one that isn't happy. Joseph approaches and they go through with it pretty much, not everything, but they were told that they rip off his coat and they throw him into the water cistern, which is empty, so that he can't get out. But then it does seem that their conscience does begin to needle them. Maybe it was the violence of ripping off his cloak and seeing him down there trapped. But Judah is the one who says, maybe we shouldn't actually go through with killing him. And they conveniently see a convoy of slave owners going past the Ishmaelites and decide, well, maybe we could just sell him to them. In verse 27, Judah's reason for that is, after all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. So something is needling at his conscience. So Joseph is sold and he goes off and they think they're never going to see him again. And then they carry out what is a really, I just think it's such a, all of it is awful, but this is really awful. They try and cover up what they've done. So they kill a goat, they cover his coat in the goat's blood, and they go back to their father and tell him that he's been killed by a wild animal. Can you imagine allowing their father, who loved Joseph so much, to believe that this child of his was dead when actually they knew he was alive? I can't imagine how that played on their conscience over the years. And Jacob actually says, in mourning, I will go down to the grave for my son. That's such a desolate verse. It's as if I will, this, as long as I live, I will never get over this terrible tragedy. So, it's a pretty sorry tale of what jealousy can give rise to. If the story ended there, we may well have the question, where on earth is God in this? But of course, the story doesn't end there. It ends in a much happier place as Joseph goes through all these different experiences. But as Rob mentioned last week, the story of Joseph foreshadows the story of Jesus. There are quite a lot of similarities with what happens to both of them. I don't know whether you picked up on a very small detail. Joseph, we're told, was sold for 20 shekels of silver. I don't know if that rings any bells with what happens to Jesus when he's betrayed by Judas. He's sold for 30 pieces of silver. Both of them for things that they hadn't done. So it's a punishment that they didn't deserve. But both of their stories end with resurrection, life, and redemption. I think that that says something really powerful and important to us about God. This is a God who can take the utter mess that we can make of our life, that can take our weaknesses and our failings, and he can say, I can still use your life for good. I can still do great things with you. That's one of the things that is so amazing about the Bible, is that it isn't a book which is pious and says to us, this is how you should live your life. It is a book which is full of the stories of the most broken people that God still uses in really powerful ways. So the whole thing about God is that this is a story of redemption. Now, there may be many things about our world which we might find depressing and difficult, but we need to hold in our hearts the nature of this God. Because this is a God who says, whatever we face, hang in there, because I am with you, and at the end of everything, there will be no more crying or mourning or pain anymore. That is the ultimate promise of the Christian faith. So that is one of the wonderful messages of the story of Joseph that I suspect we'll probably keep on seeing as we go through it. But now just to think a bit more practically about jealousy and about how that might work in our own lives. Human beings, as you will know, have a real fundamental need to feel loved and valued and important. I believe that that sense within all of us has come from God. Because we are infinitely precious to God, we have infinite value whoever we are. Psalm 139 is one of my favourite bits of scripture that really puts that across in such an intimate way, because it talks about how God planned us and knew us even before we were born, that he watched us growing in our mother's womb, that he has plans for our life. When we feel jealous, sometimes it is linked in a mysterious way to that sense of value. Jealousy can come about at times when we are made to feel less than who we have been made to be. I was very conscious looking at the story of Joseph, particularly this bit, about how the conditions for that jealousy were created by someone else. And I really wanted to think for a moment about how can we avoid giving rise to jealousy in other people. We're not responsible for how other people react to their feelings, but we can avoid making people feel that in the first place. I guess thinking about families are places where jealousy often plays a part, whether we're conscious of it or not. In fact, very often it's not very conscious. It's just something that's going on in an underlying way. But maybe this could just make us think for a moment about our family relationships, whether we're parents or not, one way or the other. Maybe we could stop to think, are there any relationships where I need to be aware of how I'm treating someone? And if I'm not aware of anything like that, maybe we should say to God, if I am treating anybody in my family or otherwise in a way which isn't fair, please make me aware of it. So that could be our starting point when it's to do with families, just being aware that it's happening. But those of you that know me know that in my day job I work as a school chaplain, so I work a lot with young people. And there was one little thing that I see so much in my day job that is linked to jealousy, and it's that Pandora's box, social media. You may or may not be a user of social media, but I think it's important just to be aware of some of the things that can go on linked to that. Now, I'm not saying that all social media is terrible. There are a lot of really good things about keeping in touch with people. But so situations that come up a lot that I've seen in my school are a young person will see a photo on Instagram or something of a group of their friends who've gone out and they haven't been invited. So it's that awful feeling of insecurity that comes from that. Or somebody posts a picture of their brand new custom-made Nike trainers that cost £250. Or somebody posts the perfect selfie on a day where a young person is feeling really fed up with themselves. Quite often, in those situations, it could be a little bit about the person who is posting trying to make themselves feel a bit better about who they are. It's about trying to boost their own ego by making other people feel bad about themselves. I'm sure a lot of it is not conscious, but that possibly is sometimes what's going on underneath. And it's not only young people. I don't know whether you've ever come home from work, you've had a terrible day or whatever, you're feeling a bit low, you look onto Facebook and somebody has posted 100 photos of their holiday in the Maldives and you're like, oh. So really, it's just a little thought, just to be aware of how what we put out there on social media, how it might make other people feel. A lot of the time it's fine, but just be aware. And now just thinking about what we do when we do feel jealous. How do we turn our reaction to jealousy into something that's life-giving rather than life-zapping? I've talked before in a sermon about the reptilian brain. I don't know if anybody will remember. But the reptilian brain is the part of our brain which is the very oldest part in terms of our development as human beings. And it went back to very primitive humans who had this kind of brain. And it's all about trying to protect ourselves. Particularly, it's about fear, it's about running away, it's about fighting, and it's about the need to reproduce to keep the human race going. So it's all about those very animalistic instincts. It's possible that sometimes jealousy can be about trying to protect that sense of value that we have within ourselves. When we feel jealous, it's those times when we feel less than we have been made to be. It's when we can react in a negative way, when we're reacting according to the reptilian brain. We're lashing out. So Joseph's brothers do a fantastic example of that today. The way that they react to Joseph is to lash out, to get rid of him, get rid of the threat of my own sense of value. That's what they're doing. So perhaps when we feel jealous, quite a helpful thing might be to just try and analyse what is behind that feeling that I have inside me. What is causing me to feel that way? If we think back to Joseph's brothers, if they were analysing their jealousy, it might go something like this. It makes me feel that my father loves Joseph more than me. Therefore, my life has less value than his. So I want to get rid of him so that I can feel good about who I am. Do you see what I mean? So if you can try and analyse where it's coming from. This is where having a faith can make a real difference. Because the God that we worship, as I said a little bit earlier, says to us, you are infinitely precious and unique. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing in their life or whatever they are doing to make themselves feel good about themselves. What I care about you and who you are and who I have made you to be. This is the God who at the end of Jesus' story says to us through actions, you are worth dying for. We may well get a message from other people that we're not equal, but this is about a God who says, you are precious in my eyes, and that's all you need to know. It's really difficult, I know, sometimes to hold on to that sense of how much you're loved by God. But that can be a starting point in going back to that if we have an attack of that feeling of jealousy. I do think that jealousy is about an insecurity within ourselves that God longs for us to be free of. I was reminded when I was thinking about this of when I first became a school chaplain. It was 5 years ago, and in the first few weeks of starting the job, I was sent away on a conference with lots of other school chaplains from around the country. And lots of them have been doing the job, obviously, much longer than I had. And I found that I could not wait to go home from that conference because I just found the whole thing so intimidating. They were all talking about, I've done this and I've done this project and all these things that just felt so far beyond me when I was at that stage in the job. And I came home and I really had to stop. I thought, I have to listen to what is God saying to me about this awful feeling of insecurity. And when I really focused on God, I knew that he was saying to me, remember, I have called you to do this job. You are exactly where I want you to be. And I will give you everything that you need to be able to do this job. Don't worry about what other people are doing or how good they are or how bad they are at their job. What I care about is what you can do, what I can do through you. And when I remembered that, it was such a liberating feeling to remember that God doesn't compare me to anyone else. So maybe that is something we can try and remind ourselves when we get that feeling of jealousy, because ultimately that's about comparing ourselves to other people, when we have a God who never does that and has given us everything that we need for our life, to be secure in that love. So, in this story, this chunk of the story that we've had today, we have seen probably some of the worst sides of human beings. But we've also seen that the story doesn't finish there. That at the end of it, there is resurrection and there is redemption, and the same is true for us. Of course, it is a cautionary tale for what can happen if we allow ourselves to listen to that internal critic that says, you are less than what you've been made to be. That's how it could end, if we listen to that voice. But also, you know, when we do focus on that voice of God, we know that we've always got a new chance, a new start. It's so life-giving, the way that God sees us. So perhaps just two very small practical things to take away from today. First, just think, are there any relationships in my life where I need to just be conscious and to think about how I'm treating people? So that's one. The second one, are there any situations in my life I'm facing where I am feeling less than I have been made to be? Because if there are, remember, you are a child of God. And he has given you everything that you need to face that situation. Amen.